This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray. The new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers on the Cray commitment to adaptive supercomputing, providing scalability across the HPC performance spectrum. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownxc30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Chinese scale top 500 wall.
Preparing for new number one at IFC.
Welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for May 31st, 2013, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell of Intersect 360 Research, joined again by Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Addison. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. What an exciting week in the news we had here. I think we're finally getting around to a lot of people have their press releases starting to in news announcements gearing up for the ISC time frame, but they all got trumped by something that wasn't supposed to be news until we got there.
Right. So we'll talk a little bit about a couple of the announcements that you got trumped, that's for sure, as there were more and more rumors circulating about what is expected to be the top system on this year's top 500 list out of China.
Yeah, I think it's pretty certain as details are emerging that China is going to have a new number one system. Now, to be clear, this is stuff that normally would be embargoed and not announced until we got to the top 500 announcement at ISC. But as the benchmarks were coming in on a new Chinese supercomputer, the rumors started going around, and HPC Wire and you, Nicole, get credit for having it confirmed from multiple sources to where it really just became news that HPC Wire had to break as details started to emerge about this major supercomputer in China.
Right. Yeah. And as I said in one of the early articles when we first started to reveal a little bit of news around it, we don't usually report on rumor, but this was the sources that we had backing the news.
This was more than rumor. This was news confirmed from multiple sources. You had the story.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what really broke the dam here is that there was a conference that took place in China or a small event where a number of people were gathered, and I'm not sure how it went down, if it wasn't under NDA or how that worked out, but numerous people at that event, and then, of course, before that, I'm not sure when the benchmark was actually run, but numerous people before that understood what the basic specs were on the system, and then by midweek, we had a really good sense, an exact sense, of exactly what that system looks like. And we're getting more details coming in on Monday that are from a very, very reliable source.
Yeah, so, well, tell us about this system, right? We're hearing it's not just a new number one. It's a new number one by a fairly wide margin.
A fairly wide margin, indeed. So I'm going to say, to be safe, that this is between 53 and 55 at peak. And then 27 to 29 for sustained performance.
So petaflops. 53 to 55 peak petaflops. I had seen 54.5 peak petaflops. So I think that's a realistic number.
It's a realistic number. It's right in that range. And then 27 to 29 sustained performance. So this is far and away, if this is actually true, which again, we've all but confirmed this with all the right sources, that this is going to be far and away the top system this year in a really thought-provoking event in terms of kind of some larger political and even economic issues. But to get back to the system itself, so we did confirm that there are 48,000 mics on the system, which is rather impressive.
48,000 Intel mic processors. We don't have details public yet about the interconnect, although there's, as they're calling this supercomputer Tianhe 2, certainly speculation would be that it's a follow-on of the Chinese architecture, the domestically produced architecture, in order to gang all of those Intel mics together.
That is a very reasonable thought there. And we do know, obviously, that it is a proprietary interconnect, but that's sort of the missing piece here. We do expect, again, to have more details on that early next week. So all the details will be revealed. We also know that we're looking at around a petabyte of memory, 12.4 petabytes of storage. Also, again, pretty impressive specs on that. It's a matter of deciding what types of applications are actually going to run on this, what the efficiency profile looks like. Those are going to be the really meaty details that we'll probably have to wait until ISC to report.
We'll keep looking at them, but you know, there are a few other points that I like looking at with regards to this. The first is we've heard that 27 to 29 petaflops of sustained LINPACK performance, which already is about double the current top of the top 500 list, that only uses about 85% of the mics that are going into this system. So that's not even the best that they could potentially do.
Right, and that's a noteworthy point there. I should also mention that when I was having some conversations with people who are taking a look at the system, they also mentioned that same thing, that this is what it tested in at, but the actual performance they're capable of getting out of it is far greater. And this system, if you remember, the Tianhe 2 wasn't even supposed to roll out until 2015, and at that point they were saying it was going to be weighing around
100 petaflops. So what we've done is we've moved it in, but not quite as big as the original SQL was going to be. But still, an accelerated time frame, and all of a sudden putting China back on top of the world in terms of supercomputing power.
Right, and I have to wonder what the change in political climate in China might have meant for this pushing up of the 100 petaflop deadline.
That is an excellent point, because this is the first major supercomputing announcement we've seen under the new political administration, which we had commented on before. This is really, you see, every 10 years the Communist Party in China will have a major change of the president, the premier, the Politburo, and this is the first major announcement we've had under the new president Xi Jinping and the premier Li Keqiang, we had talked about them being really economics people who are going to be able to focus on the continued development of a Chinese middle class, the major economic developments in China. We weren't sure where supercomputing stood in that. A lot of the previous rulers in China all had engineering backgrounds. That was a very typical thing for cabinet members or Politburo members in China to have such an economics focus. We weren't sure where supercomputing was going to stand, but here's a real statement that they're going to be looking at supercomputing as a real pride for a matter of national pride in China.
Right, and Inspur, the system vendor behind the system, they were not completely happy that we broke this story. We did receive some word from them. And their statement, I think this is interesting and speaks to your point about politics and how the Chinese may be looking at how this influenced their competitiveness. They noted that this is going to be the second time that China has won the first chair. This is how they put it, of course, first chair of the top 500 after 3 years of Tianhe 1A.
Right.
This states the continuous improvement of the Chinese HPC industry, that Chinese, quote, hard power is one of the largest in the world, like HPC R&D and construction. Meanwhile, Chinese, quote, soft power includes HPC application and talent catching up on the advanced level in the world. Now, if you can make any sense of that, you got the idea. So the Chinese are probably looking at the hard power versus soft power, the application plus system side, and what it means for key areas in their economy.
Absolutely can make real sense out of that, because you're talking about not only the supercomputer, but the fact that you've got all the software and people skills that go behind it in order to really run applications on it in an efficient way, which is what supercomputing is all supposed to be about. It's even more noteworthy when you look at the fact that this Tianhe 2 system, as much as it's Inspur servers, the real news is that it's Intel processors, these MIC processors that are all going into a new number one supercomputer in China. Doesn't look like they're using the Godson processors for this. I doubt that's a dead project, though, and you have to wonder whether any future Chinese supercomputers would be based on Godson. But for the time being, you're talking about 48,000 Intel MIC processors going into a Chinese system. That's why you have to look at both the hardware and the software and the people implications, to me.
Right. And so maybe after the break, let's talk a little bit about some of the political implications of the fact that they are using American-built processors to outcompete us here in the United States. If you want to pick up after our break.
The XC30 series has been designed with a holistic approach to optimize the entire system to deliver sustained real-world performance and scalability across all hardware, networking, and software. The Cray XC30 series leverages the combined advantages of next-generation Aries Interconnect, a flexible new network topology, Intel Xeon processors, integrated storage solutions, and major software environment enhancements. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
So, Nicole, we were just talking about the fact that we've got these American processors going into a new major China supercomputer and what some of the political ramifications might be in the United States and elsewhere.
Right. I don't think it would be that easy to get a firm number on this, but just I wonder how much money has been kicked to Intel even over the last 5 years to develop these technologies that have now fed into the Chinese top system.
Well, it's a good point. I mean, Intel was the recipient of two Fast Forward awards recently from the U.S. government in the development of exascale technologies. One of them they got directly. The other of the Fast Forward awards went to WAM Cloud, which then, of course, Intel purchased. So Intel walks away with about half the money from the Fast Forward exascale program and currently have their processors in the new number one supercomputer in China. Now, these processors are officially commodity parts that anyone can get. So they're not technically under any kind of export restriction. But when you talk about the hard power, soft power equation and what it takes to really put these together, I think it does underline the point that anyone can build these supercomputers using these American technologies.
Right. Hey, just curious, how long do you think it'll be before the Chinese are a processor powerhouse themselves?
Well, it's speculation to see whether or not they even will be, but they've clearly signaled their intention to be in that game with the development of Godson processors. And to the extent that the U.S. might ever reevaluate whether they want to place any kind of export restrictions on the components themselves to China, we already saw T platforms get blacklisted earlier based on something that, you know, whatever it was, remained speculation. But if you had any kind of similar restriction on Intel processors going to China, there would be enormous trade implications in that, first of all. And second of all, China would have to look at whether they've got their own domestic processor capability to fall back on.
Right. You know, not to get too conspiracy theorist about this, but that might create something of a supercomputing Cold War where you really have East versus West when it comes to technology, both outcompeting each other in this race to create the top processor market. So if you have cheaper labor, for instance, if you have all the talent that you need and you're going to do business with people that the U.S. will no longer do business with, including Russian companies like T Platforms or others, that opens up a whole world of political intrigue, I must say.
It does, but I don't think it really winds up going that way in the long term for a couple of reasons. First of all, China's a major trading partner, not only in the U.S., but in other Western nations as well. And I don't think you want to wind up with any kind of trade Cold War going on there. It would be too damaging to the worldwide economy. Furthermore, I don't think labor is as cheap in China as it used to be. You know, we could always fall back on that cheap labor argument, but as China continues to work to develop its middle class, labor costs in China are rising, certainly not to the extent that they have in other Western nations yet, but that inequality, I think, is going to lessen over time. And then I think the most interesting implication out of all of that is that this new Chinese supercomputer comes right on the heels of a landmark free trade agreement signed within the last week between China and Switzerland, which is going to have enormous manufacturing implications as you look at the notion of Chinese manufacturers operating as Swiss subsidiaries, which can allow them to operate with higher quality brands for Chinese manufacturing.
Wow. Wow, that is absolutely, I think, potentially disruptive to manufacturing potentially, especially if you look at, again, they're calling this hard power versus soft power. Plus, they've noted several times, especially INSPER, that construction and manufacturing are key targets for their goals in the next few years.
Manufacturing is a major part of this equation, and it'll have implications up and down the chain, not only at the top of the supercomputing market, but how digital manufacturing technologies get integrated into Chinese manufacturers and how those products get sold at different levels of quality around the world, particularly with these free trade implications. I think there's a lot more to this story other than, hey, here's another big supercomputer. The final thing I'd like to look at with regards to it being a top supercomputer is here we've gone past 50 peak petaflops and north of 25 peak sustained petaflops on LINPACK. You know, with all the talk about the delay in exascale and it can't be done by the end of the decade, I'm not so sure. You know, especially if you'll give me 2020 as being the end of the decade. 2019 might be a little harsh, but the talk that it can't be done by until 2022 or later, I'm less and less sure about that. I think in 2020 we might see a sustained exascale system. If not from the Japanese and maybe the Chinese, I'm not convinced the U.S. are the first to get there right now, unless there's a major change in the political climate in the U.S. But I think Japan and China are both on pace to get there in the next 7 years.
Absolutely. I can't disagree there. And seeing technology like this filter in plus the potential of Godsend makes that far more possible. Like we said earlier in the podcast, a few big stories. Biggish stories got ignored this week in the wake of this bigger story about
Well, certainly not ignored, but the big popular one to talk about, and I mean, the Twitterverse exploded with the Chinese supercomputer news. It was all over the social media. But you're right, there were some other noteworthy stories that HPC Wire does have coverage of.
Right, and if you go ahead and take a look at our Off the Wire section, which is where we post kind of news snippets from around the week, you'll see a few announcements, including from Cray. They just had an installation, but also from AMD. AMD announced their Opteron X series, which is one of their low-power Intel Atom competitors. And while they didn't necessarily say that this is an HPC offering, it does open up a new conversation about the potential for the microserver market to infiltrate in a new way into HPC for certain applications.
Yeah, these are the Kyoto processors, now becoming the AMD Opteron X series, all focused on low power, although they are talking about doing it in scalable architectures, including, of course, into the HP Moonshot servers, which themselves are all about low power. They're talking about the applicability for mobile, for cloud. HPC, you know, low power gets discussed. There are more and more users, as we've noted in our research, who have to account for power as part of their HPC budget, not just someone else's problem at the facilities level. These systems do take up a lot of power. But, you know, this has been more of a supply-side thing in HPC. We haven't seen a whole lot of end users clamoring for, give me the low-power processor. And, in fact, our recent history is littered with companies who had tried to differentiate around low power, like Cycortex or Ryan Multisystems. Those low power architectures hadn't really been sustainable up until now, so we still need to see what the role of a low power offering might be in HPC. Now, I think they'll find certainly a play for it in a lot of other places. It doesn't mean it's a bad announcement. They needed a low power processor to compete here, and more people are starting to maybe talk about or experiment with it in HPC.
Right. And they've got the GPU IP, which is important. They've got the C-Micro fabric. So that's definitely a story we'll keep our eye on. For now, they were pitching it as, of course, cloud and big data, because pretty much everything is cloud and big data.
And we always talk about the overlap between HPC and cloud and between HPC and big data, but that doesn't mean that all cloud or all big data is always HPC either. There's an overlap, but it's not complete.
Certainly. certainly. I couldn't agree with you more. It's easier to take technology, though, that may have been tucked away in higher-end computing corners, though, and make it more approachable and marketable, I think, for some of these folks if they wrap it around big data language. It's such a pervasive term, just like cloud was a few years ago. It's commonplace to hear people throwing these terms around now.
Maybe one other quick one to get in, as I noticed NVIDIA had an announcement this week around using GPUs to accelerate HIV research, announcing a breakthrough there.
Right. So this was research done on the Blue Water system. They used, I believe it was 3,000 Kepler K20Xs, and so some real work being done on Blue Waters, which is noteworthy.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I appreciate about NVIDIA is they've always got their eye on what the end user application is. They're among the best at telling us not just how cool the product is, but here's what it's done in a way that really matters to society. I believe this was also covered in, was it in Nature that they got this article covered?
They had the cover of Nature, actually.
So kudos to NVIDIA for that system, that research, just sort of an interesting piece. Invite our listeners to go read the full story off of HPC Wire.
Right. And what you mentioned about NVIDIA really pushing user applications, I do go to their GTC conference every year, and I have to say that's one of the most fascinating aspects of that show, even just walking around and looking at the different posters to put all of the technology in context. It's not just about chips or architectures or the underlying technology. It's what's being done with it. It's always very striking.
It's always fun to watch. The applications are the most fun thing about this job, and I can't wait to see what applications start rolling off of this Tianhe 2 system.
I do not think you're alone in that.
All right. Well, thanks, Nicole. It's yet another reason to be excited about ISC. We'll get all the details about Tianhe 2.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite has been sponsored by Cray. The new Cray XE30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers on the Cray commitment to adaptive supercomputing, providing scalability across the HPC performance spectrum. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXE30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.